Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
I propose this question to James Hamm that joins us here, Kings Insider from The Insiders. Hamm, I asked if, you know, a theme of today has really been like, does it like what is the future of this Kings team? Like, how good can they be? How bad could they be? Like, what is ahead for them? And I asked the question, if the Kings had perhaps taken a different direction and maybe pushed San Antonio a little bit harder, De'Aaron Fox deal is still getting done. And, you know, instead of taking this big glamorized deal with all of the young players that they like and all of these draft picks, I'll pose, you get Keldon Johnson back, right? And maybe a draft pick, maybe two draft picks. Are you better off with that trade, even today, than you are with the Zach LaVine trade?
Man, it's so tough. I mean, you're taking a considerable step back for today. I think if you go a different direction, like, look, I'm one of the harshest critics on Zach LaVine. And it's not because I dislike, you know, Zach LaVine as a person or anything else. It's just that, like, look, you know, he's been in the league a long time. We know he's a scoring threat. We know he's a highlight reel dunker. You know, when he gets hot, you know, like, get out of the way. But we also know that he makes a ton of money and then he has injury problems and that he doesn't really play defense. And, you know, as much as, you know, like the backcourt of Malik Monk and Zach LaVine is always going to be a problem. It just is. And that's because neither one of them are like renowned defenders. When you mix in DeMar DeRozan, now you've created an even, you know, bigger problem. And the bigger problem is that you really can't have undersized 4 and 5. You have to have shot blockers. You have to have long, athletic, you know, people who can disguise the problems that you have up top. And even that won't work when you have like three guys who are not, you know, even league average defenders. And I think Malik can be a league average defender, but he was already there and DeMar DeRozan was already there. I think this team would have been better off if they would have gone for a less expensive option. If they would have gone for a player who fit better than LaVine. But I also understand that, you know, it's not just as simple as that. You have an owner who wants star power on his roster. And unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of players out on the market that were available that would have brought like sort of that cachet. And that's one of the reasons why they went for LaVine. He's a player that wanted to be in Sacramento. He's repeated that over the last couple of years that, you know, like, or his agent has, that it would be a good fit. But a good fit with De'Aaron Fox. And I think that is the crux of this. There's a big difference with this roster with De'Aaron Fox and Zach LaVine than there is with without De'Aaron Fox. And that's because De'Aaron Fox does play defense regardless of, you know, what some people think of him. He is a guy who led the league in steals last year. He is a guy who can impact the game on both ends of the court when he wants to. And Malik Monk really just isn't that player. And that's okay.
Right.
It's okay. You just don't pair those types of players with multiples like him. Right. And it's about like advanced team building. You have to be smart about when you're building your team. And sometimes if, you know, like they figure out a way to get like a really good defensive point guard to pair alongside Zach LaVine and they make some moves down the road that end up, you know, either pushing Malik Monk to the bench or DeMar DeRozan is no longer there, then maybe Zach LaVine works perfectly fine. But, you know, this team had an issue with defense already, and you created, it's not even like an issue with defense. It's like a 4-alarm fire with defense. You know, their defensive rating is one of the worst in the league in the last, you know, like 10 games. And that's because you have defensive players you got players who don't really naturally play defense.
Yeah, giving up 140 to the Pelicans is brutal. Like, one overtime or not, like, that's insane. And that just might be the season, Hammer. That might be what we're looking at the next 20, was it 7 20-something games, whatever it is that's left? Like, that could be what we're looking at.
No, I agree. And, you know, like in the chat, you know, Kyle Williams, perhaps we should allow this situation to unfold, right? And observe how they play and develop a rapport. Like,
I'm all in on that. Like, I'm all in on that. I'm not going to hang my hopes on it, but like, I'm in. Like, I believe in what Kyle's talking about right there.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's fine, right? That's the situation you're in. There is no other recourse. So we will have to do that. But at the same time, like, man, DeMar DeRozan's been in the league 16 years. Zach LaVine's been in the league 11 years. This is year 8 for Malik Monk. You know, they don't have like a stretching device to make Domantas Sabonis, you know, like 3 inches taller and his arms 6 inches longer. So, we're not talking out of turn here. We're, if you're going to analyze basketball and be honest with people, and then you have to, like, look at the positives and the negatives. And, you know, like, we talked about it earlier on the Insiders about the Jordy Fernandez situation, right? Like, Jordy Fernandez is a star in this new Dream Team documentary, right? And, you know, Kyle asked me, hey, do you think Doug misses Jordy Fernandez? I said, no, I don't think Doug does. I think, yeah, Mike did.
Yeah.
And like, as tough as that sounds, people are like, what do you mean by that? It's like, what I mean by that? Like, there was a trust and a bond between Jordy and Mike, and they depended on each other. And when Jordy left, he handed that trust to Doug, and they didn't have the same trust and rapport between them, and it didn't help the team. And so, yeah, did you miss Jordy? Of course you missed Jordy. The players missed Jordy. Mike missed Jordy. Mm-hmm. But as far as Doug missing Jordy, no. Like, could he use another defensive mind? Of course. But there wasn't that rapport, and there wasn't that necessity to, like, lean on each other that would have been there. And if Mike would have got fired this summer and Jordy would have been on the team still, Jordy wouldn't have stuck around if Doug Christie got the job and left Jordy behind, and Jordy, you know, was going to be his assistant. That's not the way it would have worked. So, you know, like, look, the reason I bring that up is just like, things, like, you don't have to let something play out forever to know that it's not, like, the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't back up the fastest point guard in the league in De'Aaron Fox with the slowest point guard in the league in Corey Joseph. You don't go out and draft the fastest power forward in the league in Marvin Bagley and back him up with Nemanja Bjelica, the slowest power forward in the league. Like, that just realistically doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then when you watch it play out, you're like, oh, okay. Wow. That doesn't really make any sense. Like, yeah, that's all we're saying here. It's just that, like, you can, if you watch basketball, if you study the game, you should be able to see components that should work together and components that won't. And then on top of that, we just had 3 years of DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine in Chicago together. It's not like you didn't have a sample size. You knew exactly what you were getting, and you probably don't even have the defensive pieces they had in place in Chicago to make it work.
You don't have the defensive pieces, but I do think you have a better basketball team.
Talent-wise, you have more talent.
Yeah.
Okay, but
maybe not. Okay, so I see what you're saying. They have more talent, but maybe not a better team. Maybe not a better group together.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. Like, a paper championship has never existed. Like, you don't win one on paper. Like, even during the pandemic, they made these guys play out the end of the series and see how it worked out. They didn't just hand somebody a championship because they thought they were a better team. And so, like, you got to go out and play. And if there's already a history of how this works and how this doesn't, like, it's just going to take a hell of a coaching job. And so, like, I don't know how you disguise the weakness, but it's what you got to do. You got to, I mean, it's not going to be easy. And, you know, I do like some of the acquisitions. I really like Valanciunas. I like Jake LaRavia. And for that matter, I like Zach LaVine in the right situation. but the right situation isn't the one the Kings were in when they acquired him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just makes it extremely tough. Like, there are teams in the league that could have supported this without like having to reinvent the wheel. And the Kings just weren't one of those teams. And I don't think I'm being, you know, like a Debbie Downer. I'm just being realistic about, you know, the task at hand and how do you figure out how to move forward. And like, look, we're not talking about one season. This is, you're now locked into this roster, a lot of it for a couple of years. Yeah. And so you got to find ways to adjust without having any payroll at all. You do have assets now, but the payroll situation isn't going to get any better. And it might take you trading away another really good player because it just doesn't work in order to disguise the mistakes that you already made.
The assets being primarily the second round picks?
No. The Kings have, like, they have a lot of first round picks now. They have an extra 27 and an extra 31 first round pick. But that 27, you have to remember that that actually has a, like, it helps them a lot. We'll know, you know, when we get to April, whatever, whether this is a playoff team or not, whether they might be able to keep that their pick this year or not.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't, you know, if they give away their pick, now the Kings have a 26, a 227s, a 28, a 29, a 30, a 30, a 231s, and a 32 once we hit July 1st. So now you're looking at a team with like 8 first round picks. And that's a good thing, you know, so then they can go out and if they need to use first round picks to go acquire somebody, they can. And, you know, again, if you want to use DeMar DeRozan's salary to go acquire somebody, now you're looking at a $24 million, $25 million placeholder, you know, and you can go out and try to move some things around. So like, it's not all doom and gloom, but you're in a situation that is going to be very difficult to move away from, where you have two players that are going to combine to make close to $90 million and you don't have a playoff roster.
Mm.
And that's not typically a good place to start.
You have two players combining to make $90 million and you probably don't have a team leader either. You probably don't have like a definitive number one on your roster either.
No, I mean, that's a problem.
Because I love Domas, but I don't believe he is a definitive number one. He is a perfect, you know, 1B or 2 or however, like, you want to phrase that to massage, you know, the ego a little bit. But he is perfect for that role, in my opinion. But you need a one, and the Kings just don't have that one. And I don't know, and I think that was a conversation Kenny and I were having earlier. I don't know that they had it with De'Aaron either, which is, you know, that's part of the issue. Is I don't know that De'Aaron is a definitive number one, and that's why I think he's in a great spot now, because he doesn't have to be. But Kings were just kind of milling around here with guys who were good, but no, like, when it's time to get to the playoffs, when it's time to make the playoffs, when it's time to make a run, time to make a push, time to do all of that, that, like, win a series, you had that guy who was like, yeah, I got it.
Okay, so I would say this too, like, outside of like the two catastrophic events that have happened to the Sacramento Kings, right? So the Ricky Berry situation and the Bobby Hurley situation. Like, the next most catastrophic thing that's happened to this team is when Chris Webber blew out his knee, right? Mm-hmm. I think we can all, that was the end of what could have been like the Kings dynasty,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, or whatever you want to call it, the golden age of the Kings, it died that day, right? It lived on for 3 more years, but that day is a day that we didn't know it at the time, but it was like a catastrophic blow, right? But that's when you have to make really tough decisions. And, you know, Jeff Petrie on his way out the door made a ton of, you know, like, calculated errors. He tried to do some things and he had no payroll and all that stuff. But one of the things you can say that he did do that helped the franchise sort of survive and move forward was he took Chris Webber's gigantic salary for that day and age, and he broke it into 3 salaries, one of which expired like the next year, one that was like 2 years of salary, and one that was like 4 years
and
of salary.
And Kenny Thomas, who I think is still getting paid.
Kenny Thomas, exactly. So, like, sometimes that's the best thing to do. It's the most difficult thing to do, but it's to admit that whatever you built isn't working. and you it to move forward, you do have to take some steps backwards, and that's not what the Kings chose to do. So 2 years from now, we're going to be looking at a situation that could be, you know, greatly different. Like, again, maybe Zach LaVine isn't on the books, maybe, and DeMar DeRozan probably isn't on the books anymore 2 years from now. And then you figure out how you move forward. But we have to worry about what happens between now and then, and how much change happens between now and then, because, you know, just like De'Aaron Fox looked at this situation and said, I don't think this is the right spot for me. There could be other players that do the same exact thing, because they're looking at this the same way that you and I have been looking at this over the last couple of weeks. Like, how do we get to the next level? And am I going to squander the prime of my career doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, like, there is a snowball effect that is already rolling fast down a hill. Like, how many of these things does it consume on the way down the hill? And you hope that it doesn't just keep rolling and consuming more. And so, like, look, it's a difficult place to be in. And, you know, it's also what could be a learning experience, but I don't know if that's really going to be the case, because, you know, when your back is against the wall and you make a move that you didn't realistically have to make right now, you could have waited till this summer. You could have opened the search up. You could have tried to get more teams involved. You could have seen, not even if it's like De'Aaron Fox going to the Spurs still, there's still an avenue that you could have gone and got your team better in a different way by not including the Bulls, by including a different team that had someone else that might become available this summer. By not doing that, you put yourself in a very, I would say, compromised position, where you've got to figure out a way to, like, do smoke and mirrors to get through a season, and then really reassess your entire basketball program this summer. And that's going to be difficult.
Yeah, and I think the thing I hate most about that is I'm not a believer in this front office at all. I think they do need to be let go before any other impactful decisions are made for this organization. But my fear is that has a massive impact on Doug. Doug is not just trying to get this team to become a cohesive unit and get to the playoffs and all of that. He's trying to earn his shot. He's trying to earn his chance in the league, and that's tough. Like, I mean, you know, one might result in the other. It's really hard to tell. Like, I'm trying to work through a situation, Hammer, where I'm, you know, it's not, but I'm starting to feel like six might be a bit far fetched. Again, number wise, like, it's not crazy, but I feel like you know, the six might be a bit far-fetched and anything above that. But, like, I'm trying to figure out a situation where this team, you know, maybe they wind up a 7-8 or whatever. They win one or two games and they get to the postseason. I'm trying to figure out, is that enough for the front office to keep their job? And I don't know that it – I can't figure out the answer, because that would mean there was an obvious turnaround. But I just – you signed Mike Brown, like, I guess with a gun to your head, and then you drafted Devin Carter. Both of those things just feel like catastrophic screw-ups for me.
Oh, no, there are plenty of them.
There's a lot more, but those two feel just immediate.
I think what they feel like is, like, just highly questionable. Like, you're confused by them. You know, again, if you were going to put Mike Brown on such a short leash, why didn't you just walk into the season as a lame duck? And if that's something that they felt like they couldn't do because they had outside pressure to sign Mike Brown, I don't believe that at all. Like, again, you know, people like us on the radio or me writing things or other people writing things that, like, you should really sign Mike Brown to an extension. You know more than everybody else does. You have more information than everyone else. If you have players coming to you that don't want to play for Mike anymore, or you have a player that's coming to you and saying he'll only play for Mike, like, those are situations where you had more information than everybody else at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to make the right decision for everybody, for the whole franchise. And you know, again, if that situation was going to anger De'Aaron Fox and you knew it right away, like, then you had to like kind of bite the bullet then, like not just squander a whole bunch of money. Like nobody asked them just to pay Mike Brown so he could coach 25 games and then get fired.
Yeah.
Nobody was asking for that. But if you're going to walk into a season with a coach that, you know, again, had led you to a playoff series after 16 years of not making the playoffs and who had won an NBA Coach of the Year, you need to have a reason why you're moving away from him. And, you know, I think, again, in a way, Mike Brown actually gave them the out they needed. Mike actually, he opted out of the final year of his deal, not the other way around. They had a mutual agreement for the fourth year. He opted out because the salaries in the NBA went up for coaches and he was going to renegotiate that deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But you had the opportunity then, like, okay, you opted out. Okay. We're just going to go a different direction this summer, but that's not what they did. But, and so like, again, I don't know, like we're just, you know, I feel like we keep dredging up the same exact stuff, but like this thing feels like avoidable. And not only that, but it just like it feels predictable. Mm-hmm. Like all of it felt predictable the entire time. And like, saw this one coming.
The thing I just don't get is how did this Mike Brown thing go south so quickly? You make the playoffs the first year. You're the coach of the year. You're the executive of the year. You're the clutch player of the year. You're riding high, all of this. Things don't go well the second year, and I do think Mike is responsible for some of that, but how did we get to the point where they did not want him back? And we know this now to be fact. They did not want him back as the head coach. How did we get there so quickly? It makes me wonder if they ever wanted him to be the head coach and somehow they got stuck with hiring him.
I think they did want him to be the head coach, and I think that, again, that was Monty like winning a battle. Like that was Monty saying, okay, this is, I interviewed six coaches. I whittled it down to three coaches and this is one of the coaches. This is a coach I want to hire.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, like, let's be honest, Monty was right. Monty struck gold. He had a coach come in, have an 18 game improvement, bring his team to the third place finish in the Western Conference and make the playoffs. So like that move in itself was right. And that's after, I don't even know how many coaches, because I can tell you Mike was my eighth head coach. But before that, there was, I think, three other coaches after Adelman. So we're talking like 11 head coaches that couldn't get the team to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And Mike does it. So I don't think that that's the wrong move. But, you know, like I look at what DeMarcus Cousins told Hoops Hype, right? And I don't know if you read the article, but they had a Q&A with DeMarcus Cousins. And like we could talk for an hour about the legacy of DeMarcus Cousins and what he believes is his legacy and or what he believes is the narrative around him and what wasn't. But that's not my point. My point here is that DeMarcus said something I thought very profound, that the goal is to make the playoffs. And then they didn't have another plan after that. And you saw it, like, after they make the playoffs, you know, where do we go from here? And that's usually something I don't want to misquote him here. He said, I think De'Aaron Fox is a very special player. I think Sacramento's lucky and blessed enough to get that talent. I think he did some things that a lot of people didn't think would be profitable. That maybe that's a weird translation there. That team reaching the playoffs again, I think that makes him as a legendary player and Kings player. But I felt like once they reached that moment, I don't think they thought past that. And in time it showed. And I agree with Cousins. Mm. Like it feels like they only looked at their team as like an upward trajectory at the beginning. It was a beginning of a story that had a gigantic straight up arc.
Mm-hmm.
And they miscalculated. They thought that Keegan Murray would continue to take giant leaps forward, and he didn't. They thought that Kevin Huerter at 24, 25 years old would plateau at worst, but if nothing else, he would still be a great shooter and they could still rely on that. That didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Like all of these pieces that they thought might work out didn't. And then they didn't do the things to support the team in the right way. And so like year two of Mike Brown, like you could tell, number one, that they didn't have the horses to go, like to take this team and make them an actual playoff team, not a play-in team. And you had opportunities. You had opportunities all throughout the season to go and improve the roster, and they chose not to. And so, like, I think that there's a lot of blame to go around for all of it. And you know, again, at the end of the day, Mike Brown and the way that the team performed in his last 2 weeks on the job, like, you could tell it was over. So, like, I'm not even going to, like, go at the Kings for the actual idea, like the way they handled it, the lack of press conference, the, you know, the weird way in which they had him practice and all that stuff. Those are like little blips in the story. At the end of the day, we all could see that the team wasn't playing hard for him anymore and that he had lost the room in a way. And I don't know why that is 100%, but it doesn't change the fact that it happened. And when that happens, it's usually time for a coach to go. So, yeah,
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's all complicated, man. It's all wrapped up into one giant puzzle. But, you know, I said this to Kyle earlier. It feels like you got a bunch of people working on different puzzles. And that's just not it's not productive. Yeah. You got people who are working on a coaching puzzle. You got people who are working on a player puzzle. You got players who are working on their own puzzles. And none of it was part of the same group trying to do something together. And, you know, like outside of everyone breaking their fingers at our Odyssey, you know,
fingers, hands, wrist. Yeah.
Yeah. Like outside of that, I think, you know, we had a puzzle building competition and everybody's got to work together to work on the same puzzle.
That was very intense. Yeah,
it was. And it's not super simple. But the only way to do it is to like have a plan going into it. And everybody worked together to try to create something. And I don't feel like that's what we've had here. We've had a lot of like too many fingers in the pie, too many cooks in the kitchen, whatever you want to call it. It just feels like there's just too much all the time. And then there's a lot of finger pointing and a lot of like ducking. And at the end of the day, like the whole story, like the story behind the story on this one is like gross. Mm-hmm. Like it totally is. Like you and I both have been way too deep into this one, and it's like from start to finish, it's all weird and gross and like funky, and like you're not sure who's exactly telling the truth, but you think you do, and you can put a bunch of pieces together as somebody who's like on the outside trying to reassemble the puzzle. But I think that's where we keep coming to the point where you look at it and it doesn't matter how many pieces I get from other people, it's not the same puzzle. Everyone wasn't working on the same puzzle. And that's a problem.
That's why when people call to tell me stuff now, I just say, call James. I'm out. I don't want no part of this. Just call James. We'll come back. We'll come back. We'll talk about this second part of the season, what it looks like for the Kings and what it looks like for the teams around them. That's when we continue here with our insider from the insiders. It's James Hamm with Dealer and KC on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Back here with our man James Hamm as we close out today. Just anxious to close out these next few days as it feels like we're just waiting for Friday to get here. It doesn't feel like we're waiting for Friday to get here. We are waiting for Friday to get here. Of course, we do have basketball tonight. One of the fire games, the rescheduled fire games from Southern California earlier this year with Charlotte and Los Angeles will take place. Charlotte and the Los Angeles Lakers. Will take place, but the Kings, they'll be back on the floor Friday night at the Golden One Center against the Golden State Warriors. And I think that one's interesting, Hammer, because it feels like these two teams could be moving in different directions right now. Obviously, the Warriors are rejuvenated. They're feeling good. They have, you know, Jimmy Butler. They got Draymond Green guaranteeing championships. They just hosted the All-Star game, and it feels like they may have gotten a little boost. I don't think it's a huge needle mover for them in terms of certainly winning playoff series and championships and things like that. But I do think it might be good enough to solidify a spot for them towards the upper part of the play-in. Maybe if things break right, to the sixth, but I'm not going to go that far yet. And I think this is a big test and a series of big tests that'll be ahead for the Kings in the next, you know, the next month or so.
Yeah, I mean, this is how it all starts, right? They got 27 games to sprint to the finish. And, like, again, we don't know. Like, a couple of years ago, I kept warning you guys that, you know, we get to the post-All-Star schedule and the real teams usually show up. And somehow the Sacramento Kings ended up being one of the real teams that showed up during the 2022-23 season. And they were one of the top three teams, four teams in all of basketball in the second half of the season, which is what we always refer to this segment. I don't know what team is going to come out of the break and whether they're going to be rejuvenated and have a better game plan and move forward and fix some of their sort of defensive liabilities and get smoother on offense and have some tough discussions about playing time and rotations and all that stuff. But you're facing a Golden State team that is in a similar boat and a similar boat with they went out and got like another big money contract and then even made that one worse by extending Jimmy Butler's contract for another 2 years. And so they're locked into that roster, an expensive roster, like the Kings roster is expensive and maybe a more expensive roster for the next couple of years with something that may not work too. And we need to see how long the Jimmy Butler experience works for them in Golden State. But this is probably either his last stop or his second to last stop. And like everything tells me the same thing, you know, like we can point to certain things that Zach LaVine doesn't do. I can tell you certain things that Jimmy Butler does. And typically what he does do is after like two seasons, he blows up his franchise and like leaves everything up in smoke. So I'm intrigued to see what this Golden State Warriors team looks like and how they come out and how they handle themselves. I just don't know that you know, they're going to be able to piece everything together on the fly and think that this is like a championship caliber roster, because that's not the case.
Yeah, it's definitely not. I think there are a couple of other really interesting teams to watch for a couple of different reasons, Hammer. We talked about the Warriors and how they may be going in a, you know, perhaps an upward direction. I think Phoenix is a really fascinating team, because there's obviously talent there on Phoenix, but there is bad vibes in there. There's bad vibes in there. So I don't know what they wind up looking like. They're, you know, a game and a half back from Sacramento right now. And the other one I'm really fascinated, two of the teams that I'm fascinated as to what direction they go are Phoenix and Dallas.
Hmm. Yeah, I think Dallas is a mess. And you know, first of all, they're a team that just traded their best player, and then they traded their best player for another star, and he went out and tore his adductor, strained his adductor badly, like in the first game. And now they have three other centers on the IR, most of which will be out for at least a month, and sometimes some of them even longer than that. That team is super beat up, and I think that there's a good possibility that they fall in the standings. Kyrie Irving, it might be able to keep them afloat for a while, and maybe they figure something out there, but it's just really tough to go into every single game completely undersized. And I think, again, we saw it early in the season with the Warriors, where smoke and mirrors coaching can disguise a lot of the issues that you have as a team. But at the end of the day, you know, talent will typically win out, and a 27 game or 25 game, whatever they have left, it's usually a big enough sample size to sink a team or to see a team rise to the top. And so that's one team that I expect to fall. I also, you know, the Suns, they are like the most dysfunctional group that I think we've seen as far as like player mix and everything else. And again, they're kind of like the Kings and the Warriors, where, their talent says that they're probably a better team than they are. But the reality and the situation that they're in is that they aren't very good. And so you're trying to see if they have some sort of way in which it all pieces together. I'd even put the Clippers in that same boat. I just think the Clippers somehow they've won more games than the other teams, but they're sort of in the same, where they have like heavy star driven team, but at the end of the day, like everything else isn't that great around them. And they seem to find a way to win. And I think that's a lot about coaching. And it might, like, if you're a Kings fan, it might give you some hope that maybe Doug has this team's ear and can help lead them through some of the situations that they're in, like some of the better coaches in the league.
What do you think about Denver? We were talking to Trista earlier, and she said Denver is a team she's really fascinated to watch here this last stretch of the season and as we head to the playoffs.
Yeah, I thought they were cooked, and all of a sudden they're not. And I think a lot of it is it just Jokic has fully backpacked that team forever, like all season long. But then the rest of the group started to figure out how to get it rolling. And I think they are a team that slow played this season a little bit, but now we're starting to see like the efficiency of their offense. And that's something that, when you have a player that's as good as Jokic and who's putting up a triple double every single night and averaging over 30 points a game, you're always going to have an opportunity. And, let's be honest, this team won a championship a couple of years ago. It's not like they've lost pieces, but they have figured out ways to like grow some of their other talent and make them fit into patchwork and kind of figure out the whole situation. So I like that team a lot more now than I did even like a month ago. They seem to have like locked in and figured out how to win a bunch of games that, in a way that feels more sustainable and feels like almost like, oh my gosh, they're really, really good. Mm-hmm. That especially that one game where they had like they something crazy, like they outscored their opponent like 88-46 in the paint. Mm. And you're just looking at them like, oh my goodness, like there is a way that team can beat you that is demoralizing. And when they're rolling, they are very, very good.
Do you think the team that wins the championship this year is a team that's already won a championship?
Yeah, I still put the Celtics as like the odds-on favorite. And then I would go OKC, and then I would go Cleveland. And I would be surprised if Cleveland gets all the way there to the end, just because, they're in their first year. They were really good last year, but they're in their first year of being like, okay, wait, we got something that might be magical here. And so I think there's a possibility that they could build on this. Plus they went out and did some things at the deadline, that were, I think solid moves to improve the roster. And overall, I like their talent, but yeah, I would, maybe OKC is the one that they could sort of upset Jesse and the Boston Celtics. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I think we're pretty close to, like, we kind of know who everybody is. And someone brings up Gilbert brings up the Knicks. I think the Knicks are like a very, very tough team. I just worry about, like, what do they look like after an 82-game schedule? And because Tom Thibodeau just plays everybody the whole game. And their players haven't historically held up outside of Mikal Bridges, who doesn't miss games at all.
Mm. Denver, Boston, and I guess Milwaukee. I don't know if Cleveland, I don't know if you could throw Cleveland in there, even though they did win a championship. This feels like an entirely, they did, but this is an entirely different Cleveland Cavaliers team. That's one I'm actually sneaky interested in watching because I don't think anyone really buys them. I think people look at them like they're a cute regular season story. They're the Atlanta Hawks. They're whoever, they're gonna finish at the top of the conference or whatever. But when push comes to shove, they're going to get roughed up by one of the big boys. And I don't think people look at just the Boston Celtics as the big boys. I think some people might look at the Knicks and the Milwaukee Bucks also as one of the guys who could rough up Cleveland.
Yeah, and they might be right, but I'd also like be cautious thinking the Bucks are going anywhere, because the Bucks have flamed out in the playoffs in the first round of the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Like, they haven't shown you that they can, and you know, whether it's injury or whatever, they definitely are a team that, you know, has flamed out big time. I just like Cleveland is, they won 48 games last year. So they sort of took their big step, and then you would think that they would get up to, you know, the 46 to 40, I mean, the 50, 55 to 56 win season, but they're going to blow right past that. It looks like they're 44-10. They're tied with OKC with the best record in basketball. They're really good. I think they are a team that you worry about, where, you know, they're not like, I would say, like, not to be disrespectful, but like the Houston Rockets, they're not the Memphis Grizzlies who, you know, took a year and a half hiatus, whatever, and are now back up, and they're the number two seed in the West. I still don't buy either one of those teams as contenders, as far as like the Rockets or Memphis. And in the West, I think there are only two contenders at this point. Someone could try to make the argument that LeBron and Luka can win a championship this year, but I'm not buying it. I would say OKC and Denver are the two teams that I would look at in the West. And then in the East, I think they're probably, I think Boston will represent the Eastern Conference, but mm-hmm. I think there are three, maybe four teams that are really good and have an opportunity. I mean, like, look, Milwaukee's 29-24. They only have one more win than the Kings. So it's not like they're, you know, on fire and showing everybody, you know, like they're a true contender. And I don't, you know, again, they made it to the Eastern Conference Final last year. I don't believe in Indiana either.
Yeah, I'll give Indiana credit though. Like, I'm with you in that regard, but I'll give Indiana credit. Like, they did not look good to start this season at all. They were under 500, and they've been able to turn that around quite a bit, to the tombs of not only being at the fourth spot in the Western Conference, or in the Eastern Conference, excuse me, but they're seven games above 500. So they had a decent little turnaround without any, like, you know, eye popping over their head 17 game win streak or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are playing a lot better, and I still don't know that I just believe in them fully as like a contender. That doesn't mean that they aren't a good team. You know, like I think that they are like middle of the road team a lot of the way, same way I think of maybe the Clippers, maybe Minnesota at this point. You know, I just, they're not a team that blows me away with like their overall talent and depth and like skill set. Again, great coaching, and that's going to take you a long way, but overall, that isn't just like an overwhelmingly no-brainer second round of the playoff team.
Yeah, no, not at all. And how we get there will be the most fascinating thing. Again, with the season getting underway, like you talked about Luka and LeBron, like I'm kind of intrigued. The Lakers were playing pretty well, you know, leading into the Luka trade, and certainly you saw, you know, Kenny pointed it out, they had some bounce in their step after that Luka Doncic trade. They've, you know, I'm sure they liked Anthony Davis, but they were, you've got to be kidding me. We did what? You know, we've got to get, you know, Luka back to health. We got to get him back to cooking and all of that. But the Lakers are a team I am kind of intrigued by. I'm kind of interested to see, you know, how high they can get into the conference. You know, they, you know, it's not outrageous for them to be, you know, they're three back. I think they're three back from Memphis. Two isn't outrageous. No one's getting to one, but can they get to two? Can they get to three? Can they, you know, jump Houston right now? Does Houston continue to fall back? I think there's a lot of really good storylines entering the second part of the season.
Yeah, we'll just call that Lakers team the Alex Len effect. Yeah. You know, you go out, you get Alex Len, and you start winning instantly. Yeah, I do think the Lakers have an opportunity to get right back into the conversation. I don't know that like, again, that Luka and LeBron, like, they're just going to find some sort of chemistry that makes them a contender right off the bat. Like, do I think that they can make the second round of the playoffs? Absolutely. You know, LeBron can make the second round of the playoffs by himself. But to get to the next step and then the next step, that seems really, really difficult for a team that's piecing together two stars on at the same time and who, you know, made some other moves that, you know, well, the one move that fell through. And I don't know that I would like them better today with Mark Williams, but certainly over the next couple of years, I would like them better with Mark Williams if his body holds up. But I don't think it will.
Well, they get a chance to see Mark Williams tonight. Mark Williams Dalton Connect revenge game out in Los Angeles tonight as the season gets back underway. But we will have to wait till Friday. Did you enjoy a few days off him? You didn't even have to go to San Francisco, and you didn't have to go cover Domas or a rising rookie, as Jason Jones pointed out with much vengeance when he talked about some of his old Kings assignments. So you were able to kind of chill out here for a week or so.
Yeah, I definitely took the weekend and tried to get away and try to watch as little of the basketball as I could.
Yeah, that was pretty easy.
Yeah, just kind of get a fresh, clean look at what's happening here moving forward. And, you know, I'm surprised we haven't, it is Wednesday. We haven't heard of a practice or anything for the Kings yet. And so that's a little odd. Usually we have at least one practice already, but we'll have to see what happens there. And then tomorrow, I'm sure the Kings will practice. And, you know, it's like it's time to get ready for the stretch run. And this thing is going to it's going to go fast. There's so many games in the month of March. It's going to be an absolute blur. And we'll know very soon if this team has got any shot to be at least a play-in team or possibly a playoff team.
Yeah, you mentioned it's going to go by fast. Like, I can't believe how quickly this season has gone by. Again, it's been three different seasons all wrapped up in one. The Mike Brown season, the Doug Christie season, and now the De'Aaron Fox season. And I'm going to connect Mike Brown and De'Aaron Fox with my man Johnny Jennings at the Made for More Realty team. They can help them sell their home. The real estate bar has been raised. You can avoid the hassle of selling and get at least three guaranteed cash offers in 72 hours. Michael and Patricia, they were selling their home, and after interviewing two other agents, they decided that Johnny Jennings was the right agent for them. Johnny was able to get them top dollar for their home and help them make a smooth move out of state. Sounds like the two guys we just referenced right there. They offer a listing warranty. If that's something, if something happens at the home while it's listed, it gets fixed at no cost. You can ask about buying your next home before you even sell yours. You can ask about their guaranteed home sale program. Expect more, get more with Johnny Jennings and his team at Made for More Realty, California DRE number 01982171. Just Google Made for More Realty today and get more for your home. My man, Johnny Jennings. Insiders back tomorrow at 10 a.m. And Hammer, there's no game tonight. We're just going to continue to beat these Kings conversations up until this team takes the floor on Friday and we can get a feeling for what they look like.
Yeah, just got to see what it looks like. We won't, again, we'll know quickly, but we got to see how it plays out.
And will these couple practices that they'll have help? Well, I guess Thursday's tomorrow. Maybe they're only practicing once. Maybe James is like, or maybe Doug was just like, take an extra day off. I'm not really sure, man, but I'm excited to see this group get back on the floor. I'm excited to talk to Matt George, who will be with us tomorrow. I'm excited for you to be back with us tomorrow. Beginning at 10 a.m. with the Insiders here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.